It is time for your award-winning KDNK local newscast for Monday morning, March 6th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. The Colorado Legislative Animal Welfare Caucus recently hosted a panel discussion at the state capitol about Colorado Parks and Wildlife's plan to kill predators this spring in the name of research. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh has more.
Dr. Kevin Crooks, one of three scientists from Colorado State University at the panel discussion in Denver last month, summed up what they thought about CPW's plan for a predator study that would kill mountain lion and bear on the West Slope.
We believe it fails to meet the standard of best available science.
The Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission approved the controversial research project last fall, which basically allows the agency to kill mountain lion and bear during May and June for the next 3 years in the Piance Basin and the next 9 years near the Arkansas River. Jeff Versteeg, CPW's Assistant Director for Research Policy and Planning, told the caucus that these areas were chosen because agency studies showed that predation was, quote, limiting the mule deer population, end quote, not oil and gas development, but mountain lion and bear.
Our study of deer in the Piance Basin began actually 9 years ago, and it was based on the hypothesis that energy development was limiting that deer population. And to our surprise, results did not support that hypothesis.
According to CPW's predator management plan for the Piance Basin, most of the study area is private land owned by energy companies, and there is no hunting season in May and June. The agency has hired Wildlife Services to hunt and kill the animals using several methods: cage and culvert traps, foot snares, dogs, and firearms. They expect to kill between 5 and 10 cougars and 10 to 20 bear each year, with the option to increase that number. CSU scientists Barry Noon and Joel Berger, along with Kevin Crooks, challenged several aspects of the so-called predator study, including if the mule deer population is actually in decline and whether predators are in fact the real cause. Noon listed several criteria for determining best available science.
Conservation. Is the proposed research novel and innovative? To what extent will the proposed research lead to original or potentially transformative insights to improve wildlife management and conservation in Colorado? Is the plan for carrying out the proposed research activities well-reasoned, well-organized, and based on a sound scientific design? Will the research results be widely applicable to other management situations in Colorado? Is the budget request aligned with the significance of possible outcomes and insights? Is the research team qualified to conduct the proposed research? And it's our opinion that this proposal fails in all but the last criteria.
Versteeg says the project will have absolutely no impact on the bear and lion population because more lions are born and survive each year than would be killed in the study. He has even higher hopes for the Arkansas project.
We believe the mountain lion population in the study area after the end of the project will actually be larger than it is today. And that is part of the study. We're allowing mountain lion populations in some areas to increase, and we're reducing it in the other areas. So the net result after 9 years will actually be more mountain lions on that landscape than there are as we sit here today.
Wild Earth Guardians filed suit in late January to stop the study. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
A thank you to Delia Malone for sharing audio of the meeting. A Republican-led effort is making its way through the state legislature to change how the taxpayer's Bill of Rights is calculated so Colorado can keep more of the tax money it collects. As part of our Capital Conversations series, Benta Brooklyn looks at how the measure could free up millions of dollars for transportation, education, and health care.
I'm joined by John Frank, a reporter for the Denver Post, and Charles Ashby, a reporter for the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel. Taper restricts state government growth to inflation plus population increases, and anything over that amount is supposed to get refunded to voters. This bill would change that Taper calculation. John, can you explain how it would work and how it would free up more money?
The main difference in the current calculation and the calculation under the bill is what it measures. So right now, Taper measures the cost of government, that is, the population that needs the services and the cost of providing those services. Under the bill, we would move to a personal income growth measure. Now, that's an economic indicator of growth. That is essentially an indication of how well the state's doing. And it does allow the state to index its spending to the overall economy.
Charles, there's a lot of support for that. People are saying, look, when our economy is growing and we're bringing in a lot of tax revenue from businesses and other people, why should we then have to refund it to voters when we have a lot of infrastructure and other needs in the state.
The thinking is that if people are making more money, then they can afford to not get as much back in a refund, or in this case, it would be probably no refund for a while, maybe 10 years, maybe we don't even know how long. And so it does offer a wider base in terms of raising the revenue cap, allowing the state to keep more money, and I think they're projecting up to $200 million a year over the next couple of years.
Democrats have supported trying to make changes to Tabor to free up more money. This is a Republican-sponsored effort. Why is it still going to be pretty tough politically to pass?
The first time I heard about it was at least a decade ago when the Democrats had talked about doing this, and never, even when they had the House and the Senate and the governor's office, and never actually did it, I'm not sure why. But it's different this year because we have Republicans who are introducing the bills in the House and in the Senate, and it even got more Republican support, not much so far in the first committee. It's always going to be in trouble politically because the Republicans are always defending Tabor and always saying that this is, you know, a cut into Tabor. Tabor is very, very popular. Politically speaking, nobody ever wants to touch it. What's disingenuous about a lot of the stuff that you see with this Tabor stuff, Tabor always says that you can put it on the ballot and let the voters vote for it. The problem is that there's no political will to put anything on the ballot. Just because people are afraid, politicians are afraid that they're going to be attacked just for even suggesting something that might be a tax increase.
It is interesting to see the sponsors of this bill, two rural Republicans, and what they're trying to do with this bill is send a statement that our rural communities are hurting and something needs to be done. Previous efforts to get more money to these communities to keep their hospitals open, to improve their roads, to improve their classrooms have failed. We talked about the hospital provider fee last year. This year it's Tabor. And this fixes a fundamental one, and yes, a heavy lift. Tabor's a third rail of politics in Colorado. You know, touch it at your own risk. But what we're seeing with this effort here is a new acknowledgement, a new, you could say, evolving mood when it comes to Tabor, that maybe 25 years after we pass this, it's not working how we intended. And that larger conversation, I think, is one of the most fascinating here, because Colorado is a national model when it comes to tax and expenditure limitations because of this taxpayer's Bill of Rights.
And I think it has a better chance of passing, I think, in the atmosphere of this year, being a non-political year. And because of the leadership in the Senate, we have a couple of Republicans leading in the Senate who haven't shut the door to this as they have to other ideas right away.
In addition to this Tabor debate we're having, you know, there's a complication with the transportation issue. Lawmakers are talking about sending something to voters to increase revenue for roads. Will they also send something to just increase overall budget revenue for other priorities as well? How much would roads get under Tabor? There's a lot of competing factors here, and either the transportation measure or this Tabor measure could easily go down because of that complication.
That was John Frank with the Denver Post, Charles Ashby with the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver, and you've been listening to Capital Conversation.
Western leaders are standing up for the BLM's new rules limiting natural gas waste on public lands. Eric Gladys reports.
More than 60 local elected officials from four Western states are calling on the U.S. Senate to defend the Bureau of Land Management's natural gas waste rule adopted last year. The rule directing the oil and gas industry to capture gas lost through leaks, venting, and flaring on public lands is under threat after the U.S. House moved to roll it back. Steve Banowski with Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship says the rule shouldn't be tossed out just because it was enacted during the Obama administration.
The methane rule to us represents just basic common sense and fiscal conservatism. We should be capturing the public's resources where possible and not flaring gas off into the atmosphere or wasting it.
A recent Colorado College poll found 83% of Coloradans support the BLM's efforts to limit natural gas waste. Industry leaders claim the rules would add layers of red tape and slow production. The U.S. Senate could vote to reverse the rules as early as next week. Colorado Senator Michael Bennett opposes rolling it back, and Senator Cory Gardner has yet to say where he stands on the issue. In 2014, Colorado state regulators worked with industry to create regulations to prevent the loss of natural gas, which closely resemble the new BLM rules. But Banowski says Colorado's efforts don't prevent methane pollution from blowing in from other states. He adds taxpayers also lose royalties when gas is wasted, and some $330 million worth of natural gas is currently wasted every year.
That doesn't sound like a lot of money when there's a $19 trillion debt in Washington, D.C., but every little bit helps, and it just makes, to me, more efficient use of our public lands and the resources that belong to all American citizens.
Elected officials who signed a letter this week to U.S. senators in support of the BLM rules argue that they create jobs through new technologies developed to locate and fix leaks, and also help reduce the air pollution that can cause asthma attacks and other respiratory problems. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
The city of Glenwood Springs welcomes Steve Boyd as the city's new finance director. Boyd is originally from the area and graduated from Glenwood Springs High School in 1987. He spent 20 years in investment banking and corporate finance. Then in 2009, he moved back to Glenwood Springs for a position at Colorado Mountain College in the business office. There, he was responsible for negotiating and managing college-wide vendor agreements, executing grants and contracts, and managing the purchasing and accounts payable departments. He also teaches finance and economics at CMC. Leaving CMC was a difficult decision, he says, adding the college's star is on the rise. The leadership team is exceptional, and it's a phenomenal place to work. But he says, I love the city of Glenwood Springs. Having an opportunity to contribute to its ongoing development is just too good to pass up. So welcoming Steve Boyd as the city's new finance director for Glenwood Springs. Congratulations.